The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
After Hours continues right here on 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens. Julio producing the show from the 620. Dwayne, we would have been 0-2 against Dirk if the refs hadn't screwed Dallas in 2006. He'd be the scrub riding shotgun for two rings, courtesy of LeBron. If the NBA Finals weren't rigged in 06, Iverson with no rings was better than Dwayne Wade.
Preach.
AI, baby, man. He's something else. I think Carmelo, you can make a case that Carmelo was as good a player. I'll say that.
Individually, yes.
Individually, he was as good of a player as Dwayne Wade was. Defensively, maybe not so much.
Defensively, I don't know about that.
Carmelo is one of those dudes who, if you need a bucket, you give the ball to Carmelo, he's going to pull it mid-range and he's got you.
Just iso him, he's good. Money.
And Dwayne Wade's capping too much.
Yeah, he's doing too much.
I'm glad that Chris Bosh isn't out here saying that. I liked Chris Bosh. He was a really good role player. Really good in Toronto as well. All right. I got a question for you, and it's going to be out of left field. Here's the out of left field question. This one actually was decided on like a half hour ago. Had one playing. We're going to go in this direction, though. I saw Oregon is coming out with new uniforms. Yet another alternate.
Always.
It's like the 15th or 16th one that they've got, which makes them playing in the video game, by the way, a lot of fun. But I thought to myself, the Jaguars also came out with new uniforms, going with a little bit of a throwback feel. It's not too much different, but it's a little bit of a throwback feel. If you were to say best uniform right now, and we might do different sports even, if you want to categorize that, we could do categories, but the best uniform right now in sports is blank. It's the best uniform in sports. And NFL, I got to go with the Bengals, and this is not necessarily a homer take at all. I mean, it is kind of, but the best helmet in the NFL is the Cincinnati Bengals.
You think so?
They don't have they don't have to put a logo on the side of the helmet. The helmet itself does the work for itself. The Bengals logo is not just a bunch of stripes.
I would say, are we talking the standard Bengals uniforms? Because I love the white uniforms.
I would say standard. The black with the orange stripes to me is killer, man.
No. See, you're coming at it as though it's not a homer take, but that's 100% a homer take.
If I were to say in the NFL, an alternate uniform or a throwback is the creamsicles of the Buccaneers. Those are amazing.
Yeah.
I like the Lions jerseys for some reason. I don't know if it's the blue and gray. It's just an appealing thing.
Yeah.
It's a good palette. Somebody from the 816 said, Detroit Tigers home jerseys with the old English D clean and classic. Yes, the throwback. Old English lettering for the Detroit Tigers. I like that one. I like baseball uniforms are interesting because they're in a way very bland. It's gray or they're white, and then they've got the jerseys. I like the pinstripe stuff that some teams have are nice. I like the Padres have a tan jersey with brown pinstripes, and there's a yellow tint as well.
I do like that.
Real nice. I like the brown and the yellow for the Padres is way better than the orange and the blue that they used to have. The Royals jerseys are very good as well. Very simple. I like the Royals palette.
I just love the blue. I love the powder blue. That's just a strong color for me.
Oh, yeah. Forget the Royal blue. The powder blue. Yeah. Undefeated. College, it's interesting when you look at college because there's so many different variations, obviously. Oregon, I think, is a very popular one because the uniforms are so flashy. But somebody says Ole Miss football. If you do their combinations are really interesting because they throw powder blue into with the navy blue and the red. It's an interesting little look that they have. Also, the same texture said throwback Arizona Diamondbacks purple. Yes, that might be one of the best throwbacks, or if not the best throwback, is the Arizona Diamondbacks purple. They had pinstripes as well.
It was a lot of purple though, I got to say.
Yeah, it was. Randy Johnson. Throwback Seattle Seahawks. That's also a very good palette.
I was going to say, the Seahawks, I can get down with that.
The slime green with the blue. That wasn't quite royal, but it wasn't quite like navy either. And then the silver, very nice.
I like, if we want to go like just across the board sports, I love the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, Anaheim, right? Yes. I don't know, for this next year, I know that their jersey color combination is like almost like a camo orange and like greenish or like tan. I think they're doing a throwback, though, to the Mighty Ducks. They're doing the purple, the yellow, and the green. Love that. Somebody from the 816 as well said old school Astros. Yes.
I'd agree with that. Houston Oilers. I liked.
Oh, Houston Oilers. Oh, man.
I love that uniform. That was one of my first NFL games.
Is baby blue or powder blue like your favorite color, Julio?
You know,
I think it might be.
When it comes to a uniform, I think so. I think that's my thing, you know?
This texture, these two textures get an award for, yes, NBA jersey. They're in the 816 and the 785, the Raptors throwback jersey. Vince Carter era with the dinosaur and the zigzag stripes. Yes.
That's solid.
Woo!
That is solid.
Old school NBA uniforms are better than the ones that they have now.
I would agree.
So much better. Someone said the Casey Current. Yeah, the teal
love
and the red combination is great.
I freaking love that. Can we talk about going the opposite direction and overrated?
Overrated, okay.
Yankees, the pinstripes just don't.
I love me some pinstripes. It's the classic look. Like, yes, it's the Yankees, but the uniform itself, yeah, is not that big of a deal.
No.
Somebody from the 816 said they like the Florida Gators and Tampa Bay Devil Rays. See, the Devil Ray uniform, not Tampa Bay Rays, not so much. The Devil Ray uniforms, yes. The Gators the Gators also have a great combo. The pure royal blue, pure blue and orange. Very good. Throwback Utah Jazz with the mountains. I like those.
Yeah, no.
The new ones they've tried to replicate aren't as good as like the Karl Malone, John Stockton ones.
The black and red Bulls jerseys. I was a big fan of those Chicago Bulls jerseys.
To me, those are very much like the Yankees jerseys. It's iconic, simple Bulls, Chicago. The stripes on the shorts, very iconic. Somebody along with your terrible line, Julio said Steelers Bumblebee. Huh, 100% agree.
Yeah. Overrated.
The Packers have a the navy
bad.
Blue with the brown circle.
Yeah.
And the numbers, not good.
No. Browns jerseys as well. Those just look like poop.
Yeah. Browns jerseys are not very appealing either. I think the Chiefs jerseys are really appealing. I wish that the Chiefs would do a throwback though. Like if they had some gumption to do like an all black jersey, nice. Don't do the yellow. You don't need to do the yellow.
I'm not
but
a fan of the mustard yellowish. It just doesn't.
And all black though, with like red numbers and a yellow trim around the numbers. Simple as that. For the 913, the retro nuggets, like the Kembe Mutombo nuggets. Yeah,
that's a good one. That's solid.
This is a fun. I almost want to look up like the AI. Speaking of Allen Iverson, and when Andre Iguodala was on the Sixers, those Sixers jerseys way better than the ones now.
I would agree.
Another team that's very, I guess, iconic, but not bland. Like the Lakers jerseys.
Yeah.
Very on brand, very, very similar from era to era, like with the Chicago Bulls as well. That was a left field question. Yeah. Oregon is not the standard jersey combination. It's, hey, what can we do to make this thing pop even more than what we already had before? And it already pops itself. Someone said the Chiefs when they were white on white. Something about the whites. Like you mentioned the Bengals white uniforms.
Yeah,
they're just
those.
A little bit. It's a little icy.
Is it too much for you? Too much? You know, I also like Miami Heat, some of their alternate uniforms. I like some of those too.
I like Miami's just regular
bright colors.
I like the red. I like the red is different. It's unique. It's like burgundy, but it's like red itself. I like those as well. That is the out of left field question. Thank you for participating, everybody who texted in. When we come back, there is no way that the Florida State Seminoles are going to join the SEC. Speaking of good, of cool jersey sets, Florida State makes sense for them to join the Big 12. Clemson, sure, but if the ACC totally disassembles, we talked about, you know, is Florida State likely going to join the Big 12 and all that? We'll talk about that a little bit, but also along the lines of if the ACC does go away, what schools do the Big 12 go after and what makes the most sense for if you're KU and K-State, hey, come on over to the Big 12. We'll talk about that next. It is After Hours on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
After Hours continuing right here on 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens. Julio producing the show. So Greg Sankey's throwing a little bit of shade at Florida State, like subtle blows their way. They're a disruptive partner. he didn't, I mean, his sources close to the SEC say, yeah, they're not going to do that because they're a disruptive partner. Oh, so was Texas. The SEC's been disruptive before.
Oklahoma.
The Big Ten has been kind of disruptive before. Considering they're the ones who are doing the stealing in the first place. They've been very disruptive. But let's say things get a little disruptive again. Florida State could join the Big 12. It seems like the, in particular with Florida State, because they want to try to force their way out of the ACC. They've had a lot of problems with the conference and they want out. The Big 12 might be the suitor because the Big 10 and the SEC might not look favorably because of some stuff that's happened over the last couple of years. What happens, though, to the Big 12 if the ACC actually does go away? Because the report has been Florida State is more likely to join the Big 12 or not, at least not join the SEC or the Big 10, likely if the ACC stays together and they force their way out. But what happens if the ACC goes away? And it's, you know, pick them at that point. I think that there are certain schools that the Big 12 would not be getting. Those schools would be Virginia, North Carolina, Duke, maybe Miami as well. I don't think Miami would go to the Big 12. Academic standards are very high for those institutions. And the Big 10 prioritizes some of that. Not that the SEC and the Big 12 don't. It's just that member schools of the Big Ten, for the most part, if not all of them, I believe, are in the American Accredited Universities group membership program. But NC State, Pitt, Louisville are intriguing options, I think. If you can get Florida State and Clemson, great. That makes you 18. Why not go to 20, though? If the ACC is going away and you're Brett Yormark, why not just add a couple more schools like you did with the Pac-12? Not just one or two, but let's go for two more after that. Let's go for Utah and Colorado as well as the Arizona schools. So you get Florida State, you get Clemson. What also makes sense, or say you don't get Florida State and you don't get Clemson. Somehow it just doesn't work out and you don't get them. NC State, I think, is a really good option. Really good football school, really solid football. They might be the epitome of Kansas State. NC State. And that's not because they got State in the name. They might be the exact same program. NC State on a regular basis goes 8-4, 9-3, 7-5. K-State, what do they do on a regular basis? They win 7, 8, 9 football games. Every now and then, they show up with a 10-game win season. I think K-State is better than NC State. But the storylines around the schools are the exact same. Solid basketball programs. Both have made very deep runs lately with Kansas State a couple years ago and NC State this past year. Very similar programs. They fit that mold. Louisville, really good brand. Solid football. Has been really good when Lamar Jackson was there. They have a Heisman Trophy winner. Basketball, very historically good program. They've stunk so badly over the last couple of years, basketball-wise. But they would join a conference that has Louisville, or that has KU, sorry, and other good basketball schools. Gonzaga is a team that has been mentioned to potentially join the Big 12 as a basketball-only school. The conference is very elite in the basketball side of things. It makes sense for them to add a school like Louisville, which has a lot of historic accomplishments with their program. I don't know if those might, if Florida State and Clemson don't work out, I don't see how it makes any. I know that, again, the NC State and Louisville would love to join the Big Ten or the SEC, but stylistically for the Big Ten and SEC, I don't know if you're as swayed by those. You don't want to add those schools. You want to go for the big dogs if you do go for anybody. That's where those schools go to the Big 12. Like the Big 12 should be welcoming to those schools.
Yeah, there's no way those types of schools get in over a Florida State or a Clemson or a Miami. I mean, which going back to our conversation earlier, again, do I necessarily believe what the SEC or the Big Ten are saying about taking other schools on? No. I mean, again,
they say they're content, but again,
yeah, the track record would say otherwise. I mean, that was the case as well before they snuck in the back door and sniped Texas and Oklahoma.
That's right.
So I don't believe a word they're saying. Again, if it was something where I understand they're coming from that perspective, if it's just a Florida State, right, kind of imbalancing the 16 versus 17 teams, okay. But you can't tell me that if Clemson wants to join or Miami wants to join, regionally speaking, it makes sense for them. From a stylistic standpoint, the SEC, it makes sense to take on schools like that. Why wouldn't they? From those schools' perspectives, though, I think you're right in that the Big 12 maybe makes more sense because you get in to a top three conference. I do agree with you that the Big 12 at this point, with who they're bringing on from the Pac-12, and that they are, I think, firmly seated as the number three right now. It's a lot easier. So they have a seat, a permanent seat at the college football playoffs. The road to you make it to the playoffs, anything can happen. I think the road to get there, though, is a lot easier in the Big 12, and you're guaranteed a seat as opposed to a Big 10 or an SEC where you're just running through a gauntlet of historical programs that are powerhouses and trying to position yourself within that race, whereas you can pick an easier race to get to that same point that you're trying to get to.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, and that's the case why you want to go, why being in the Big Ten and the SEC is nice, because you get more TV revenue, you know, the revenue is bigger in those conferences, right? But in the same breath, if you go 9-3 or you go 10-2, you still have a case because you're in that conference. Like, look, our gauntlet is so much harder to win in our conference for us going 10-2, and we got to go through all of these teams where if a Big 12 team has the same record, their schedule is not as tough. You know, we have more of an argument. I think that's where, for Florida State and Clemson, you want to go there. I think ultimately money is the reason why they would want to do that. But if you want to join the Big 12, you've got the conference is so much more competitive. So it makes it, in a way, it's still tough to win the Big 12 because everything's so tighter. But by bringing on a school like Florida State or Clemson or NC State from a football perspective or Louisville, it adds to the competitiveness where I think you can almost you can convince the College Football Playoff Committee, look, I know we didn't win the Big 12 and we're Kansas State. Like we went 10-2. We lost to Utah in the Big 12 title game. Look, we went 10-2, and do you see how good this conference is? Like, it's competitive all over. Like, there's not a Georgia, an Alabama brand or a Texas brand anymore. But competitively, it's the best conference in the country from top to bottom in terms of who can win the conference. It's very tight. I think that's where you have an argument for another seat at the table outside of just the conference champion.
Well, and I think the money up front has tended to blind teams like a Texas or Oklahoma in the aspect of, yes, you're getting more money up front by joining the SEC, but in the long run, are you tarnishing your brand?
Especially Oklahoma in particular,
right.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is, right, you had a hard time grasping and holding on to the Big 12 from a competitive standpoint. And now you want to go to the most competitive,
the best talent, the most talented conference in the country.
In the SEC, where you were kind of the big fish, right? You competitive from a competitive standpoint. We can argue that, right? They didn't dominate the way they probably should have for being the historical programs that they were. Now you go to the SEC where you're most likely going to be a mid-tier team at best. Yes, I understand your recruiting grounds are a little bit more fruitful. Mm-hmm. Like there are benefits that come to that, but it's so competitive there. You're most likely you're going to be mediocre. So now you're kind of tarnishing your brand and your legacy long term. Whereas if you stayed in the Big 12 or say a Florida State, Clemson, a Miami comes to the Big 12, they sit at the top of the Big 12 for who knows how long. Their brand now is at, you know, they're at the peak of their exposure, of their success. Mm. Not to mention, you know, you get into, like you said earlier, you go against a bunch of two or three other Big 12 teams that are 9-3 like you are. That's going to look a little bit different when you're stacking those teams up versus an SEC and you're going against a Georgia or an Alabama and you're 9-3 and they're 9-3 kind of thing. You're a little bit lower on that totem pole versus when you're in the Big 12. You don't get the edge that you would get in the Big 12. So that revenue that you get building your brand, having that long-term success, I think kind of makes up for what you don't get up front by going to an SEC.
I think that's a lot of the conversation that happened with Missouri when they left the Big 12 in the first place. And they did go to two SEC title games, and they did not win them.
Look at Colorado. Look at Nebraska. Those schools like that, you know?
That Nebraska, look, I think right now, honestly, you have the Nebraska and Missouri are the best examples. You have Nebraska, and you have currently what Missouri is. Nebraska made a couple of Big Ten title games, lost both of them, and now where they're at. They're firing
the
coaches. They fell off the planet, and somebody from the 913 said Oklahoma's going to turn into Nebraska. Then you have Missouri,
100%.
Who, in a way, were kind of they were kind of similar, but they've hopped back on the bandwagon a little bit, and they figured it out. Granted, no more divisions in the SEC makes it even harder for them to really climb the totem pole and be in the playoff discussion. That's why the pressure's on Missouri to go 10-2 or better this year with the lighter schedule. When we come back, you're going to hear from Coach Klieman, Lance Leipold, and Coach Drinkwitz at Missouri a little bit on their seasons. We're going to break down different things that they had to say at their respective media days right here on 610 Sports Radio. It's After Hours. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
After Hours continues right here on 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens. Julio producing the show. So media days have transpired for the local schools. Had Big 12 media days last week, SEC media days this week. A lot of tea in SEC media days. If you haven't started listening to the 249 Miles of Football podcast, every single Wednesday morning, a new episode drops. Next week, I'm going to be covering SEC media days. We're going to talk about Missouri and Coach Drinkwitz in particular, but also other media day conversation. And then I'll tell you why Missouri or how Missouri wins the SEC to wrap up the month of July. I already did that with K-State and KU. If you missed it, go back and listen anywhere you get your podcast, the 249 Miles of Football podcast, also on the Odyssey app. We have some audio from said media days. Coach Klieman at K-State, Coach Leipold at KU, and then, of course, Coach Drinkwitz at Missouri all spoke on their teams this year. We're going to start with Coach Klieman at K-State, and one of the big question marks or concerns is, hey, you lose Cooper Beebe, you've got some question marks on the offensive line. The offensive line is relatively inexperienced, losing some seniors, but Coach Klieman during media days wasn't too disturbed by that and says that he has confidence in the O-lineman, the offensive lineman room, and also the importance of developing and the time it takes to develop your offensive line. Again, this is Coach Klieman from Big 12 Media Days.
It's interesting. We lost four really good senior offensive linemen, but we have four really good senior offensive linemen returning, and that's something that maybe goes overlooked a little bit, the value of what Connor Riley does for our offense and for our program and for that room in the offensive line room, to lose the amount of seniors that we had and then still return the amount of seniors. Hadley Panzer, Taylor Poitier, Carver Willis have really taken over the reins from those guys that have left and have tried to keep that engine running. And we've always been really, really good up front, and it's due to Coach Riley, but it's those guys that have been in the program that want to stay and want to be developed and not want to get in the transfer portal just because they don't play in their first year. And an offensive line's a different deal. It takes sometimes a few years to develop. And, we've got Hadley and Carver back that have played a lot. TP's played a lot. Andrew Linegang's going to play a lot of football that's been around. Sam Heck's going to play a lot of football that's been around. So we have experienced guys that have been with our program. They're just going to gain on-field experience quickly in the non-con.
And obviously the non-con, very important for them. They only have two out-of-conference non-con games. The Arizona game is a Big 12 opponent, but it counts as a non-conference game. That adds to the difficulty a little bit of Kansas State's schedule. Obviously, protecting Avery Johnson is paramount with how much of a talent he is. The wide receiver room also is very interesting. Jace Brown had a good freshman year. They bring in Dante Cephas from Penn State. Didn't really produce at Penn State, but had a terrific couple of seasons at Kent State. There's some questions regarding, KSU, but they run the ball particularly well. Avery Johnson, dual threat quarterback, got to protect him. And that conversation is one of the key things for Kansas State and for fans to figure out in the early aspect and part of the season. This was interesting. I think another thing that Coach Klieman said, what was the culture that he's brought in. But I wonder if other locker rooms are like this, being a not necessarily a coach-led X's and O's, here's how things are going to go sort of locker room, but he lets the players kind of do their thing and he trusts them to do that.
We have kids that hold each other accountable to the standard that they all expect. And I really believe in a player-led team. And when you give those kids ownership in the locker room and give them a voice and let them handle some of the minor things that come about, they're going to be more successful. And so I'm excited because those four core values of discipline, commitment, toughness, be selfless are a part of everything we do on and off the field.
You know, Julio, we talked about it a little bit with Andy Reid and how he's a player's coach. People want to play for him. Nick Saban, similar way. You know, he's going to make it hard on you and tough on you, but he's going to make sure that you get better. I think it's interesting, this aspect of it, the idea that you have a voice in the locker room. Like, if something is wrong, let me know. If you have a concern, tell me that you have that concern. Don't just hide it because I'm the head coach. You know, be able to voice your opinion, feel comfortable in doing that, And it helps, I think, players out as leaders and become leaders, but also it allows for players to feel like it's not the coach's way or the highway. It's, hey, I can be a part of also helping the program get better and not just worry about my own thing and focusing on myself. You can focus on everybody and help out more with the process of bringing in guys from the portal and other stuff as well. I think it's a good coach to play for who has that sort of locker room, I guess.
Well, you kind of have to have that mentality as a coach nowadays, right? You can't coach the way that it used to be, right? You have to go with the times, man. You can't be this strict, you know, Bill Parcells, like run the show, like you run players in the ground, degrade them, berate them, like that kind of thing. It's a different day and age, and you kind of have to cater to your audience. And the audience right now is kind of placating to your players, being more of a player's coach, listening, taking feedback. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's working, right? It's successful. So I think that's just kind of the way I think coaching is heading, and he's kind of ahead of the curve, and that's why he's so successful. That's why he's been able to raise a program from the dead, essentially.
Going from North Dakota State, where he won everything, to taking over with K-State and Bill Snyder and all the legacy that he had, and continuing to have it be a consistently good, solid program. And then you land Lincoln here in, you know, the biggest recruit that they've ever had, the five-star tight end. I mean, it goes to show you he's trying to make Manhattan a place to be. And Avery Johnson could have gone to the portal, but he stayed. He would have been highly sought after. I'm sure he was, actually. People were trying to tamper, I'm sure, with him and all the state of college football. Speaking of that, that goes on, but he stayed. In Manhattan, another coach that's doing a great job, and all he does is win, and places that he's been is Lance Leipold. He had this to say. The big question regarding Kansas is, hey, Jalen Daniels, can he stay healthy? If he does, if you told me today, and I said this before, I think the last time I was on After Hours, if you told me, Julio, and you knew the future, and you said, hey, Jalen Daniels will be playing in all 12 games, he is going to be healthy, I would tell you with that news and the schedule, they will be in the Big 12 title game. I would mark it down. I would make the bet right now. Thing is, we don't know. There have been some reports.
Hasn't proved that before.
There's been reports of maybe he's dealing with the back issue still. Here's what Lance Leipold had to say, maybe clearing the air a little bit on Jalen Daniels' health overall. This from Coach Leipold at Big 12 Media Days.
Oh, again, I don't know, where you at, Jalen? Help me out, man. Jalen's doing everything. You know, all the stuff they do behind over here, I think we got to have them stretch or something before they do all that stuff they video back there. As much as they go, I go, if he can make it through everything they're doing to video for pregame stuff, I think he's going to be fine. Like I said, he's doing everything. We've gotten a lot of opinions, all those things. He's doing the throws that he's supposed to be making, all those things. And right now, I put the hands of, each and every day. But I know this. Let me back up. I try not to ask Jalen Daniels more than once a week, how is he doing? Because I know everybody asks him that. And, of course, it's, just keep wearing a young man out with those questions. I'll be told by somebody if there's anything going on. And And for that, for him, just on that part mentally, that he has a chance just to go about his business. He's excited. He wouldn't be here today if we didn't think he was going to be ready to go for this season. I can tell you that.
I think the question of him, of being asked, Coach Leipold, Jalen himself, whoever, you know, the health question, that'll go away on its own if he's healthy. If he plays the first four or five games and doesn't have any problems, I think the question goes away until it comes back up again, if it ever does. But until that point, if he's questionable going into week one with a back problem, he might play, but he might get subbed out a little early. Yeah, his back was bothering him a little bit. That question is going to hover over him the entire season. And Coach Leipold, I know that it is something that is not going to be fun. It's going to get old really quick if it's not already. But that
rightfully
is a,
so, right?
It is a valid question for what has happened over the past couple of seasons, that this dude has all the talent in the world, but he just can't stay healthy. And it's no fault of Jalen Daniels. Like, he's a good kid. You want the best for him, but it, for whatever reason, his body's just not letting him be able to be the quarterback that he needs to be. And I think that offensive line has had some, they got some questions at Kansas. They lost a couple of players to the draft, to the portal, to graduating. They lost some players. They've added in the portal, to Coach Leipold's credit, to address some of those concerns. And also Logan Brown, last year transferred from Wisconsin. He's fully healthy and ready to go. That's going to help. But Kansas needs Jalen Daniels healthy, and I don't think that question goes away until he's
till he proves it
playing. Yeah,
until he proves it.
And until his body can just show up on a regular basis and play. And Jalen Daniels during media days was asked, he was like, look, if you had a game to, if you had to play this week, would you be able to? He said, yeah, which is great to hear. But we're not going to know. That's why Kansas might be the most swing and the most hit or miss school in the country, to be quite honest with you, because if Jalen Daniels is not healthy, they will be a heavy miss and they're not going to be that good. They'll be fine. They might make a bowl game, but they're not nearly going to be as good
as they
could.
No more Jason Bean, right?
If he was healthy. No more Jason Bean. Yeah, Cole Ballard. I think his name is Cole Ballard. I know it's Ballard. It's Chris Ballard's son, the GM of the Colts, who's played, but he's not Jason Bean. Jason Bean helped cover a lot of stuff last year. The team's very talented, but Jalen Daniels has got to stay healthy. Coach Drinkwitz on the Missouri side of things, he was on the Rich Eisen show and was asked what the biggest upside and the biggest challenge is for his offense that returns so much, and the excitement for Missouri is on a high. Here's him answering that question of biggest upside and also biggest challenge.
Yeah, I think the biggest upside is the amount of starting experience we have coming back. I've got a 3-year starter at quarterback returning, Brady Cook, who is very efficient, takes care of the football, very athletic, runs the ball very well, can beat you in multiple ways. I've got the deepest wide receiver room that I've ever had, and one of the most talented wide receiver rooms in the country. It starts obviously with Luther Burden. Everybody knows returning 1,000-yard receiver, potential NFL prospect. But right next to him is Theo Weiss, who I credit with really the maturation of that room. Theo Weiss is a very good, faster than you think football player, an excellent deep ball wide receiver, can single up and run routes on anybody. You got Mookie Cooper on the outside. You got Marquise Johnson, who's one of the fastest players in college football. Josh Manning, Mekhi Miller. You got Courtney Crutchfield, who is the number one wide receiver number one wide player in the state of Arkansas. So James Madison, you know, coming from St. Thomas Aquinas. That room is really deep. Combined with an experienced quarterback, you have to have the ability to be explosive on offense. And then we have a tight end who is a freshman All-American, Brett Norfleet, who I think is a complete tight end, NFL prospect if there's ever been one. Blocks is as physical in the run game as any tight end I've ever been around, but he's got incredible hands. With all that being said, I know this is an NFL-driven show. We all know that in order to win football games at a high level, the biggest challenge is the O-line and running backs. We're replacing a left tackle who was drafted in the fourth round by the Jacksonville Jaguars, a left guard who signed a free agent deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and obviously the SEC's leading rusher, Cody Schrader. So that's really where we have to develop a set of chemistry and understanding, because we all know there's going to be times when the pass game's not working. You're going to have to be able to run the ball. And we talk about in the fourth quarter, you got to run to win. And so that's that's where we've got to really decide and figure out how we can be at the best. Now, I still think we're very capable of those positions. Our center started 22 games last year. Our right guard has 29 career starts. Our right tackle's got 18 career starts. I think he's the best right tackle in the SEC, which would make him the best right tackle in the country, Armon Membu. I think the left tackle, Marcus Bryant, started 29 games, two-time all-conference player at an AAC institution, so transferring up to the SEC. What's the adjustment there? Caden Green, left guard, started six games as a true freshman. So the ability's there. It's just the cohesiveness, the togetherness, who's going to emerge as the leader. Are we going to be able to sustain competitive excellence if there's an injury? That's probably the biggest challenge at the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the big question is the offensive line. From offense, the thing from Missouri that's interesting, and that was a little bit of a longer cut from Coach Drinkwitz, is the defensive side of the ball. They only return five starters. They do get some help from the portal. They lose the cornerback duo of Chris Abrams Drain and Rake Straw. That's going to be the big question mark. You're playing in the SEC. You're playing against some big-time quarterbacks. In the video game, I know the defense ain't that good. It's a bit of a problem when you're playing with Missouri. They've got a schedule where they can go 10-2. I dare say kind of easily, without much of a sweat. The toughest games are Alabama on the road, A&M on the road, and then home against Oklahoma. That's really all they got. I mean, they can find a way to skate through their conference, and they're in the SEC, so they're going to be 10-2. They might even be able to make an SEC title game because the conference is so easy, I'll be honest. Even if they don't, they're in the SEC, so I think they would get the nod to make the college football playoff. Their expectations, I think, are different in a way than K-State and KU's are, where KU, obviously, they want to make the playoff. They want to win the Big 12. K-State wants to win the Big 12. It's a little bit more competitive, and K-State's got a tougher schedule than KU or Missouri. So K-State's route to get there is going to be tougher. Who's to say they don't get knocked off by one or two of those schools and they're in a position where they don't win the conference? They might not have much to stand on if they got three losses, where Missouri, if they have two, like there might be more pressure on Missouri from the standpoint of just needing to win now than they were last year for Coach Drinkwitz to keep his job. And that's not to say if they don't make the playoff, he's not going to keep his job. I have a hard time seeing Missouri making or not making the playoff and it not being a pretty big deal in Columbia, where the year afterwards, the pressure is right back on Drinkwitz. I mean, as good of a recruiter as he is, he's got a great team and an easier schedule. They might, as long as they make the playoff, look, they might have a bad defense and they might get beat in the playoff. I don't think that matters. You'd love to win a playoff game, that's fine. I think they got to make the playoff this year. With the schedule and the way that it shapes up, they don't have divisions in the SEC anymore. They're never going to have a schedule that is this manageable ever again. I don't think they ever will. And this is the time where if you're a Missouri fan, you want them to be able to take advantage of it, and you want to see them win a playoff. You want it badly because you might not be able to see a better chance with the returning group of Brady Cook and, as he said, Luther Burden and Theo Weiss. They get two great portal transfers and Marcus Carolinano. Well, this is the year for the Missouri Tigers.
They have to win a playoff game, at least one, right? I don't think just making it to the playoffs this year.
I think making it is the
successful.
I think making it is the bare minimum where you could say, well, they made the playoff and it's successful. But I think making it and winning a game should be the expectation.
Yeah, I think if they make it to the playoffs and they lose, or say they get blown out, that's not a successful season for everything that.
Yeah, look, if K-State makes the playoff, obviously, I think that matches the expectation.
Agreed.
But it's a bigger deal for them to do it because the schedule's a little bit tougher. KU, this is the best chance that they might have too, because Jalen Daniels, if he can stay healthy, I think they can get there. But if they don't, who's to say when the best chance that talent like this with Devin Neal and Jalen Daniels is going to be around again for the Kansas Jayhawks? We will take one final break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. It's After Hours on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
After Hours, you're on 610 Sports Radio, wrapping things up. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens. Julio producing the show. a couple things that over the course of the show, some news that's come out. The schedule was released for Major League Baseball. One cool thing they're doing in just a second. Alabama is going to name its field at Bryant Denny Stadium after Nick Saban. This is something that I've thought, I haven't said it before, but yeah, they should do something for Nick Saban. It's going to be Nick Saban Field or Saban Field at Bryant Denny Stadium. Smart for Alabama to do. Two of the best college football coaches of all time. I think Saban's the GOAT. A lot of people say Bear Bryant is the GOAT as well. So having two guys like that, definitely have something named after those guys. But baseball, along with the release of its schedule, has kind of packaged together a weekend. May 16th through the 18th is being called Rivalry Weekend. And what they're doing is it's a number of rivalry games, rivalry matchups between clubs. So the Mets are playing the Yankees. The White Sox are playing the Cubs. The Angels are playing the Dodgers. Some of the others featured, obviously, for your Royals, St. Louis Cardinals. That'll be in Kansas City, by the way. But you see some other ones, the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers, the Rays and the Marlins. I think this is really smart. I like it. I think it's something that you and I, Julio, were talking about how long the baseball season is. Do they really need to be 162 games? No. I think it doesn't, but I do think that when you package games like this and you have like a rivalry week in college football or in the NBA every now and then they call it something like that, or in the NFL, there's like a specific weekend where, yeah, there are more teams that play against each other that are considered quote-unquote rivalries or the division games, et cetera. But to label a weekend rivalry weekend, it gives, I think, fans something to look forward to more outside of like just the promotions and whatnot, or just a bland series where this rivalry week, you already know who the Royals are playing. It's going to be the Cardinals. It's going to be exciting. We get to see all these other games. I like how they're labeling a specific weekend for baseball rivalry weekend. They're having it mean a little bit more than just a regular old series, which is something I think they should be doing more of.
Yeah, look at baseball kind of thinking outside the box and giving the people a reason to want to watch baseball mid-season. Good for them. This is the kind of thinking they should have been doing a long time ago, and giving people a reason to watch mid-season of 162 games. Otherwise, why join in? Heck, they should do it probably twice during the baseball season where they have like a rivalry weekend kind of thing. But those are the kind of things that baseball desperately needs to keep people interested, especially through the dog days of summer.
Yeah, I think I wonder what else, them thinking this way, I wonder what more they could do. Or I wonder who came up with this idea of that, just from how can we brand ourselves in a way that's a little bit better? How can we modernize the way that we look, the way that we sound, whether it be social media, just conceptually what the product looks like. Maybe they do this. And I know the scheduling is different because you have the 162 games, but maybe you have like a first half rivalry week and then you got a second half rivalry week where it's like, hey, this is the week where we're going to host the Cardinals. And then September or August is where we're going to travel to St. Louis. So you've got two versions where you celebrate a rivalry weekend or a rivalry concept.
Or maybe they do something like a division winner weekend where it's nothing but, the prime matchups are all division winners.
Yeah.
Something like that, you know?
It makes a lot. There's so many different ways that they can get creative with that. Obviously, it's a little bit tougher because, the draft, like you could, the NBA does a great job of this because it's easier, or the NFL where you take the first and second overall pick going against each other.
Yep.
You can conceptually maybe do something like that a little bit more. Paul Skeens is on fire. We don't know that going into the season, though, but you can flex.
Yeah.
Games. The NFL does it all the time. You can flex. The Pirates don't have like any national TV games at all whatsoever. Why would you not flex a Paul Skeens in the one weekend somehow that they play the Dodgers? Those games are going to be on national television.
Yeah.
Sorry about you. And that's where the media stuff with baseball is so tricky because you got Fox, you got TBS, and you got ESPN, but they're like specific. It's not consistent. Where the NBA, you have the TNT days, you've got the ESPN days. You got at least 4 days out of the week that are strictly national TV broadcast days. You don't have that necessarily with baseball. A lot of it is individual team stuff. But I think you could. And I wonder if that what the potential is of that for Major League Baseball, because I'm 28 years old. I enjoy watching baseball, but not to the level of what, you know, what some people have, like my dad or, you know, my grandparents who are older. They appreciate the game of baseball a little bit more for what it was in its heyday. I never really had that. Like, make it better for us as viewers to watch in a better...
Give us a reason.
Yeah, I think that that's... I mean, is that the number one thing that you say you... I mean, now that you hear that they're having a rivalry weekend, Julio, is that a yes for you?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely at least pay attention to what's going on, and if I can catch a game, cool, that would give me a reason to. Otherwise, I mean, especially in May, mid-May, I don't know that I necessarily have a reason to watch. My ears perk up a little bit and get a little tingles for something like that. When do we
need to be out again? Yeah, I think that that's something that is really good, and it can be beneficial. It can be beneficial to baseball. I like it. We need more of it. That's going to do it for After Hours. Heck of a time as always, Julio. Had a blast. Can't wait till the next time. Thank you to all the listeners who texted in and participated in the show. And whenever the next opportunity comes calling, we will be here. It's been After Hours on 610 Sports Radio. We'll catch you next time. Till then, peace.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. Just something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snaps, it is refreshing!
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.